Okay. So, in light of Rod's comments, we are moving on. We're on lesson six. We have discussed several things regarding the family, primarily related to the husband-wife relationship, and we're really going to take the next four lessons, to really dig into more specifics on the husband-wife relationship. And so, we're going to start today with caring love in the husband-wife relationship. So, in English, we only have one word for love, but in the Greek, there's actually three. And so you have eros, which is an erotic or intimate or sexual type of love in nature, and we are going to discuss that. Then you have philia, which is a love for friendship, acceptance, having the same interest. It's more related to like an affectionate, a goodwill. You give a little, you get a little. And that that's philia. And then you have agape, which is what we're going to talk about this morning, which it delights in giving and desiring with joy to love one another. It's the will to sacrifice. It keeps on loving even if the other person is unlovable. It's a caring love. And that's what we're going to be talking about in today's lesson. It's enduring, it's selfless, and it is the most difficult of the types of love to ascertain. So, marriages need agape love. If you don't have it, the other loves are going to be in trouble. So we're going to start, if you look over in 1 John chapter 4. And this is really the beginning, right? 1 John chapter 4 and verse 19, we love him because he first loved us. If someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. We've talked about this before, but when we start talking about the husband-wife relationship, where does it have to start before that? The person has to love God. If the person doesn't love God, they're not going to be able to love their spouse in the way that God intended. Or they're not going to. They may know it, but they're not going to do it. If they don't have a love for God first, this will not be a priority. So that's where it all starts. When we talk about our attitudes towards our spouse, we must always keep that in light of how do we feel towards our Creator, and do we want to please Him and do His will, and do we love Him? So understand that's where it starts. Let's turn over to Matthew 5. We're going to look at some passages that you're obviously familiar with. Verse 43, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. And then we're going to turn over to its companion passage in Luke chapter 6. Verse 27. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you, and pray for those who spitefully use you. To him who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other also. And from him who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks of you, and from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back. And just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the unthankful and evil. Therefore be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. Is this type of love a passionate love? Is this an emotional love that is being described here in this passage? I don't believe that it is, and I think we understand that. This is not a love where you just have these overwhelming affectionate feelings towards the person that's being discussed. And so if we're talking about loving your enemies in this manner, and we're going to turn to some passages that talk about loving your brother, your Christian brother or sister in this passage, does it not make more sense even more so in how we treat our spouse? Is it not applicable to how we treat our spouse? And have you ever been guilty of treating your spouse worse than you would treat a stranger? So that's the things we're going to talk about this morning, is caring love. This is a love based on appreciation for the value of another human being. In these passages where you are loving your enemy, is it because you like them? No, obviously not. They're your enemy. And yet, why is God telling you to love them? That's what his son did. And that's exactly what we're going to look at. They are not lovely people in these passages that Christ is telling us to care for. It is not contingent on the goodness or beauty of the person being loved. And we understand that when we're talking about in terms of our enemy. But just think about that for a minute with your spouse. It's not contingent on your spouse being lovely. It's interesting over in Matthew chapter 5. He says in verse 44 to pray for your enemy. Again, obviously this is not a sense of emotion, a sense of you like this person and you want the best for them. I think we all, if we're being honest, we struggle with this one. I've struggled with this one. Someone that you really dislike, to pray for their good. And to do so without hypocrisy. Not to just go through the motions of, well, this is what I'm supposed to do, but you're not sincere in that hope when you pray for that person or people. Kelly.
Said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. But therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers to his harvest. I get a sense from this passage that Jesus had a care for some of these very same individuals who would be calling for his crucifixion at some point and would disbelieve, would not believe, and would walk away. I don't think it may have started with emotion per se, but I think it developed into a true passion for that person. Though they were in evil, he wanted them to be saved.
You're right, and I think that... No. I understand what you're saying, and I think that if we do have certain people that we have had issues with, that if we can attain a level of compassion in understanding their lack of knowledge or whatever it may be, then certainly it can lead into an emotional compassion for that person. And I think that's a deeper level than maybe is normal. And of course, Christ expressed that compassion. In fact, we're going to turn over to Romans chapter 5. And while you're turning over there, just think about for a minute when your spouse says something to you that's hurtful. Are you more able and feel free to react and say things that you would never say to someone else? Are you so free and easy with this person that you kind of lose accountability for what you say? You're so close. They say something to you that hurts. You feel free to lash out and say something back. And are you following this example of loving your neighbor, loving your enemy, or even loving your neighbor? Eric.
That's actually what these instructions are about. Just draw in your fellow human. They're human. They're not the inhuman evil. They are your fellow human. They are your brother, even if they hate you.
And unfortunately, I think we see in our society that's even being driven further apart. We're being driven further apart as a country. This just having human love is. I know, I'm sure other people have probably been said 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. To me, it seems like it's getting much worse than it's ever been in my lifetime. And so when you have humans splitting with one another and not you're not treating each other with just this love, this caring love, how much more important is it that we cling to our spouse, that we have that companion, that we are practicing that with our spouses? Look over in Romans chapter 5 and in verse 6. For when we were still without strength in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love toward us that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This is the perfect example of the love that we're talking about. Christ died for the people that killed him. He was willing to sacrifice himself for people that were the definition of unlovely. This is not a love that necessarily is instinctual. There is a love that's instinctual. I believe that a parent-child, I believe that love is instinctual. You instinctually have a love for that child. It just comes naturally. I think that the sexual love, the sexual is instinctual. God created us with that. I believe the affectionate love is instinctual. If there's things that are pleasing to us, we naturally like that person. And just like he talked about in these passages, if someone is good to you, you're good back to them. We talked about that. But this idea of having a deep, caring love for all mankind, I don't think this necessarily comes natural to us. It's something that we have to learn, which is what we're going to look at in some of these passages. It's not, oh, I just automatically want to care for my enemy. This is what it means to become Christ-like, because we are looking at the example of Christ, and that's exactly what we're trying to follow. And unfortunately, we can be selfish. And so even if we're not in conflict with our spouse, sometimes this always looking out for the better for someone else rather than yourself, it's a learned behavior. It's not instinctual all the time. And yet we have the perfect example in Christ offering self for us. So do we think like this? I will be kind and caring to my mate if they are kind and caring towards me. Is it easier to be kind and caring towards your mate when they are not kind and caring towards you? What about when you're in disagreement? Maybe sharp disagreement about something. Is it so easy to be looking out for the best for your spouse? It's not. It's not. And yet that's what we're supposed to do. Look over at Romans chapter 13. Verse 8. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves one another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. So the last six of the Ten Commandments, which are reiterated here, what does Paul say that those six commandments, to sum it up, what is it? Love your neighbor. If you love your neighbor, you're going to follow these six commandments. They're not going to be an issue. We talk about bearing false witness. You have an argument with your spouse, and you're talking to someone who is a close confidant. Do you share that situation in a way that makes you look good? Let's say for just for a minute, you're actually even sharing the facts of the situation. But do you ever have a tendency to shade it that makes you look more favorable in that discussion? Is it to the point of bearing false witness? Are you giving someone the wrong impression of what is really going on? Are you bearing false witness about your spouse in a situation like that? I think we all have a natural tendency when we talk to someone about a situation to make ourselves look better in the situation. Is that displaying the caring love that's being discuss, because when you're angry or when you're hurt and you're looking for consolation, you're looking for someone to agree with you, to provide that support that you need, are you still fair in your assessment of what's going on between you and your spouse? Love does no wrong. That's a broad statement. Love does no wrong. I think most of us understand right and wrong. And I know I can look back in situations in my life and think, yeah, that wasn't displaying love does no wrong. So we say we love our spouse. But how do you prove it? Look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Now, I completely understand that the context here has nothing to do with the husband-wife relationship, but we're going to make an application that I think we can understand. So the context of this passage is Paul exhorting the Corinthians to follow through on their original commitment to give to the Jewish brethren who were in need. Okay? So if you look in verse 8, Paul says, I speak not by commandment, but I am attesting the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. Now, he uses the word love here. So the Corinthians love the Jewish brethren. How are they demonstrating that love? Look in verse 24. Therefore, show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and our boasting on your behalf. So, you say you love your spouse. How do you prove it? How did Paul encourage the Corinthians to prove their love for the Jewish brethren? Action. Prove it by your actions. It kind of goes back to that talk is cheap. We can say a lot of things with words. We can promise a lot of things in what we say. How do we back it up? We're going to look at the, you know, we've already talked a little bit about, look over in 1 John chapter 3. John's going to tell you how you know when love is real. He says in verse 16, by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. So, if you're thinking and examining yourself, do you love your spouse in this way? And if you were to ask your husband or wife, do I love you in this way? Would they give you the same answer? This is not, I think you're pretty. This is not superficial. Do you believe that you love your spouse, that they unquestionably understand you will always do the best for them? That's really the foundation of marriage, which is reflected by what? The example Christ set for us. If you don't have this in your marriage, you're in trouble. And I'm not the first person that came up with this, but I agree. When you first get married, you have a lot of affectionate love. You're real high on the affectionate love chart. But I don't believe you can start out real high with caring love. I'm just being honest with you. Because I don't think it's an instinctual behavior. But as your marriage goes along, that affectionate love may come down somewhat. But that caring love better be going up. And both you and your spouse better be learning to be the selfless, caring love towards one another, or your relationship is going to have some rocky times. Billy.
And of course, this applies to any relationship. Even these ones you talked about when you're loving your enemy. This word is a general word. It's even a word that, like what we would use for I love pizza. I mean, there's a wide range of I'm content with it. Really work on this, to I naturally love this person because they have a lot of common. It's got a wide range to it. It's definitely an emotional thing most of the time. And I think about with all of these relationships, whether it's your spouse or whether it's your neighbor or whether it's an enemy, humility has to be, and perspective has to be part of that, because in order for you that you're going to work on loving your enemy, you have to humble yourself. finds out about Saul and Jonathan's death, and in chapter 1, verse 11, David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan. Sometimes we think, well, he was upset about Jonathan. That's not what God says. He was upset about Saul and for Jonathan, his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think it's not an unfair application to say David felt this for his enemy.
And that's the example, is that he looked past, and I'm not disagreeing with what you said earlier. We do oftentimes have to start with, I don't emotionally feel love for my enemy, but God has told me that I should feel love for my enemy. So I'm going to decide to work on this. David's example is that the way that you work on this, the way that you achieve it, he had an emotional love for his enemy. Not just, well, I love you because you're a kid, like even when he brought up, which is correct. He's a fellow human. All of that played into David's perspective, which was, this is a fellow human. This is a fellow Israelite. This is God's king. This is a man who lost his way spiritually. All of those things played into David being able to humble himself and say, well, certainly, I'm a sinner, and I can find my way past my feelings, the surface feelings, the normal, natural feelings about Saul, to achieve a higher level of spirituality, to where I can even emotionally love an enemy, and when they die, I'll be for them.
And
is that hard to do? Yes.
But and I think it even speaks volumes if David can achieve that for an enemy, and that's the type of love that God expects out of us. What about our spouse? It should be a no-brainer. And yet, I would challenge all of you in this audience that you have at times made decisions that were selfish rather than selfless. And your mate sacrificed, or you made your mate sacrifice something for your own good. It's very piercing to think about. Eric.
So I just wanted to include a little word study here, because there's an aspect that's missing right now, but there is a name for it in Greek. So the eros is the generational love, and that's detailed by Greek and included in our word love. The filio is the friendly sort of diplomatic love, and that's included in the Greek and in our word love. We fold it all in. The agape, which you mentioned, is a unique love, and I'll get back to that. But there's also another one, storge. That's the tribal love. That's the familial love, and that's one that has to do with your family ties, and whether you like them or not, you know, they're your family, and that's your tribal love. These are all instinctual, like you said. So I'm just providing the verbal framework. But getting back to the agape, it's the only one that's not instinctual. It's volitional love. It's the one you choose. And it's the only one you choose. The others happen to you. Eros just happens to you. Friendship is, you know, it is or it isn't, and it's just going to happen or not. Storge, you don't choose it. No, you have family, and they are who they are. They can be bad people. Not necessarily, but the one that you choose is agape. And the reason that ties into marriage, just providing words again, is because your marriage is a covenant. It's a choice that you continually make. So agape is going to tie into your covenant relationship very naturally, because it's a choice. So
that's a great point. And agape love is the one. When we talk about marriage, a reflection of Christ's relationship with the church is the foundation. That is the foundation, is that agape love. Sean.
Sorry,
no, go ahead.
They don't know if some of these were spoken in Aramaic, and Aramaic doesn't have as many versions.
Okay.
Okay, and so one of the questions, like,
this rock I'll build my church. Well, he spoke that in Aramaic. There is no difference between the small rock that, okay. So first of all, those that are beefed up in this are saying, be very, very careful, which is why he told a whole bunch of us guys, like, either get into Greek totally or stay out of it. I don't think you can't talk about it, because that's what I'm saying. I want to be very clear. But here's where I'm at on this. There is a common sense that everyone is saying that everyone understands. So, like, if you're reading Revelation 2, and he tells them, you're doing all of these things, but you've abandoned the love. Well, that's actually agape love. Well, but they're doing all these things. But if you read that, you would think that's an emotional love. Well, surprise, surprise, it's agape love. Point being is that I think we understand from reading all these texts exactly what he's talking about. And the reason why way back, like about 6 years ago, this really bothered me is because we were visiting a place and a minister made the point to tell you that emotional love towards God is not required. Because after all, and see, this is where I'm just afraid, and this is not what you have ever said, nor do I think you said anything like this. But he says, because you can't command an emotional love from anyone. Well, that's great. So, I mean, God's no different than my boss, though. I can have a boss, and I can agape him. We'll have fun with that. So God, as you said, he starts out with children. You better believe he has an affection for them. He has a tenderness towards them. But then you're nonsense if you think that, like, oh, but he always has a tenderness towards everyone. Well, read Genesis 6 and get back to me. So, I mean, there's kind of a common sense. And I think you've said that. My only deal is, and the brass button is because some people have gone too far with this, and this is not what you're saying. This is why I want to make this super clear. Because they said, I've been dedicated to my spouse, and that's good enough.
Well, then
I don't want to, this whole feeling thing, I don't want to give that because that's cheap love. And I go, that's Jesus love.
Well, and we're going to talk about, when we get to affectionate love, about how important caring love is towards affectionate love. But if you don't have an affectionate tenderness with your spouse, you're in a business relationship. I feel sorry for you. Because you can have that caring love. You absolutely can. And that's the focus of today's study. And I think without even getting into all the Greek, we can read this and we can understand what God talks about, the concept of caring love, whether you know any Greek or not. You can understand sacrifice. And you can understand God saying, just as Jesus sacrificed himself, that's the love I'm talking about here, with your neighbor, with your enemy, and definitely with your spouse. So I appreciate that. You're right. If you don't have, and I'm, again, Christianity is a logical religion, a rational religion that should elicit an emotional response. Can we be honest about that? If you can't look at what your Savior did for you and you feel nothing, I don't know how that happens. That just is so foreign to me. Okay, let's turn over to John chapter 15 as we get ready to close. This is just building on what I was talking about. This is verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. And we looked in Romans chapter 5 about Jesus laying his life down for our enemies. So when we talk about sacrifice in the husband-wife relationship, we talk about caring love. What are you willing to give up for your spouse? What if you like to play golf every Saturday? And you don't have time because of your work schedule to spend it with your spouse? Are you willing to give that up? Does that seem petty in comparison to someone giving up their life? Whatever it may be. What if you have a group of friends that your spouse doesn't believe is good for your relationship? Are you willing to give that up? Or are you stubborn? Whatever it may be, everybody can, I would guess I have things whirling through my mind. You probably have things going on where there has been a point in time where your spouse wanted you to sacrifice something for what they felt like was for their betterment, or your, as a couple's betterment. Were you willing to give that up? What are we really willing to sacrifice? I'm willing to have this caring love for my spouse as long as I don't really have to give up a lot. When you married that person, you took them on as your companion. There are going to be differences between the two of you. And there are going to be differences of opinion. There are going to be differences in ideas. There's going to be likes and dislikes. And the question is, what are you willing to sacrifice to make that relationship as strong as it can be? That's not always easy. Sometimes it is easy. Sometimes it may be just something as easy as, you know, I'm not going to watch football all weekend. That would hit close to home. Jeff. You're absolutely right. And so what I was thinking while you were talking was, are you a better friend than you are a spouse? Do you treat your friends better than you do your husband or wife? Do you say things to your husband or wife that you would never say to your friends? Do you do things for your friends that you don't do for your spouse? I'm afraid sometimes what Jeff is talking about is we get so comfortable with our spouse that we feel free to just do, say what we want. And you think, would I ever say that to anyone else but my spouse? But you have that closeness, that comfortable, that familiarity, you just let it rip. And that's obviously, you know, sometimes the source of just continued problems. Okay, we are out of time. I'm actually over time. I appreciate your comments this morning, and 3 weeks from today, we'll pick this back up. So remember everything we talked about.